previously.tv podcast network.
So what are you into?
Information.
What do you want?
Information. We want information.
Information. Information.
You won't get it.
This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 9, Friends, Lovers, and Children. Oh. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano, Tara Bunting.
You need to know, it pains me to have to type out this title because it doesn't have an Oxford comma, and that enrages me!
It sucks.
It does suck.
Also, so that means it's friends, comma, lovers and children.
Yeah.
A beerf.
Dave, did you want to make any announcements before we begin?
Only that today is the first episode with the new soundboard set up. So
yes,
all my muscle memory is going to be a hindrance, not a help. So if clips are a little late or, you know, crazy things happen, that's why. It's not that I'm just stupid, it's that there's a new program as well.
He's learning.
Thanks for the tip, Dick.
Well, we're off to a promising start, unlike this episode.
All right, let us dig into our D plot. Steve's not ready to be a spoiler. We open with Steve and Claire, I wish, Carly, getting back from a date. Zach is asleep. Her mom is asleep. He wants to hang out. She's like, that depends how quiet he can be. There's basically a lot of hinting that they're about to have sex for the first time until then Zach wakes up. And I, this is only noteworthy because I made a GIF of it, which you can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. But as she's scrambling off the couch to meet Zach before he can see anything that's not age appropriate, her shoes are so 90s. They're like block heel. They're not platform. That's the only thing that can make them more 90s, but they're like block heel, strappy, you know, sandally type things. And anyway, if you remember, you remember.
Oh, yeah.
The next day, Steve takes Zach to his soccer game as they had previously planned, but there's a surprise that worries Steve in clip two.
Didn't tell me this was a father-son deal.
I forgot to say.
You know how much I care about you, right? But you know I'm not your dad.
I know, but you're sort of like my pretend dad.
Well, your mom and I...
Zach! Hey, is that your old man?
No,
I see the resemblance. Jerry Bogle, great kid you got here. Much improved.
Well, thanks.
You better get that jersey on. It's almost showtime.
Oh, Zach, I see what you're doing. But Steve, of course, lets himself get flattered into playing against the other team's dads rather than correct the coach about who he actually is. And as this is happening, or so we are led to believe, Carly is serving iced tea to a woman that she recognizes as a Peach Pit regular. Her name, we're eventually going to find out, is Jody. She announces that she's trying to cut down on caffeine. Like, we didn't need your life story, Jody. JK, I know why she says that. Duh. Carly says she needs the kick in the head of caffeine to keep up with an active six-year-old, and Jody can't believe Carly can have a kid so old when she looks so young, and Carly overshares that she feels like she's aged 5 years for every one of Zach's. Jody assumes that Carly has help, but she corrects her in clip three.
I'm what the statistics would call a single mom.
What? That's what everyone would call you? What a stupid line.
Also, get back to work. You have other customers. No one cares.
Yeah. Even Nat tells her this, which is like unheard of. Like, quit fucking around.
Seriously. Are you able to unbutton that uniform shirt to show some chest hair and tell people how to live? No. Then back to work.
So, and Jody apologizes for keeping her. Carly asks if she's okay. Like, who cares? This is not a friend, whatever. She's not. She has things she's trying to deal with right now. She didn't know what she was thinking she would solve by coming there and skips out on her bill, apparently. Like, I know it's just iced tea, but still. It's not like Nat knows her. Anyway. later, Carly tells Steve that she didn't know about the father-son soccer thing. I doubt it. And regrets that Zach put Steve into an awkward position. Not to say I doubt it in that she set it up. I just don't know how she would not know that, but whatever. Steve gets where Zach is coming from, but he doesn't feel right about posing as his dad or dad substitute since Zach is not his kid. And Carly gets it. He gets that she gets it. And they're both very civil, but the mood is still tense. And when Brandon finds Steve at the beat, lost in thought, it turns out that while Steve felt ambushed by Zach, he is falling in love with Carly for real, even though they haven't boned yet. So he goes to her place to apologize for being a jerk before. She says he wasn't, but he disagrees and soulfully says she needs to know he's going to be there for her and Zach. And in a horrible directing and acting choice, which you can also see in the visual aids, Carly comes out to the porch to stand with her back to Steve to say, it's extremely soapy, to say this, clip four.
Do you really mean that?
I'm positive.
Because Zach and I mean, we're a team, and I totally understand if that's too much for you.
I want you both.
Ew.
You don't know how happy I am to hear you say that.
He does not know what he is agreeing to, you guys.
No, he doesn't.
And she does, and she should be more cautious, but she's not instead because she wants to fuck Steve. And you know what? I get it. So Steve brings Carly back to his room. He is very respectful of her other obligations, like relieving Zach's babysitter and making sure that Carly's really ready and so on. But she is ready to get down and tells him to shut up. And then Carly and Steve are coming down all sheepishly post-coital as Val is walking through the foyer and the doorbell rings. And it's Jody, that blonde from the Peach Pit, who is looking for Steve. And Carly and Steve are both like, Jody, she needs to talk to Steve. There's an unnecessary introduction as Carly says she didn't know that Steve and Jody knew each other, which neither did we. Steve says he and Jody dated a couple of times before he met Carly. And what could be more compelling than for us to invest on faith in the latest chapter of a relationship that heretofore has happened entirely off screen? Why was this decision made? Like, I know why. It's because he was with Claire and then this was like his rebound person. But like, who cares if she's anyway? Jody tries to excuse herself and have this conversation later. But Val invites her in and Steve says maybe it should wait, but she can't wait any longer. She didn't want to say anything until she was absolutely sure and then was trying to decide what to do. And the thing is, she's pregnant and Steve is the father. And there is a gif in the visual aids of the looks of shock all around. But again, this is such boring writing. Like, we don't know this person. This is straight out of nowhere. Who cares?
Yeah.
Thanks so much for wasting our time.
I mean, also, like, I mean, of course, this is who this happens to. Is Steve, and I feel like this person would have a shelf of like paternity testing kits in his closet.
Seriously.
And also, I don't care. End the show.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares. These are all like these crazy adult problems that they've all been acting like adults for so long anyway, and not college kids that it's like, oh God, like we're so deep into the soap suds that I can't even. But I guess it's pointless to fight it. Let's just continue plowing forward.
Yeah, but given, like, you're right. Given all of the other, I get why they did it with Steve, because he's the slutty one. And, like, they had this whole time jump of the summer and anything could have happened. Like, who knows who else is going to come out of the fucking woodwork when we weren't watching them. But, like, there are other established couples. I mean, I guess they couldn't do it again because they just did this with Brandon and Kelly last season. But still, like, they just did this with Brandon and Kelly last season. Like, the only difference here is that he doesn't know her. And so we're supposed to think it's okay when he's kind of a pussy about it. Like, it's all bad. It's really all bad.
Yeah. And of course, it drags on for what feels like a year.
On to our C plot. Brandon finds out Noah's loaded. Didn't bother putting a spoiler in there because we already knew that. After the harvest ball debacle, Val goes to the boat to see Noah, who doesn't want to talk to her. She apologizes anyway, saying that Cooper meant nothing to her, but that he does. Noah, clip five.
Sometimes you gotta live with your mistakes.
Yeah, we know. We live it every week.
Also, Sigh. Son, buy some sleeves for that shirt. do it now.
Oh, God. Yes. Val tries to make Noah say he doesn't want to throw away what they have, and he goes in to kiss her and then changes his mind, but not before he's opened his mouth kind of wide, and it looks extremely goofy, as you can see in the visual aids, because I gift it.
So weird.
He then says this, Eclipse 6.
Whatever we had is gone. Dead and buried, okay?
That's what you do best, isn't it? Bury people.
Yeah, we got it.
I mean, that's way off sides, but also, like, you guys fucked, like, 3 times?
Yeah.
What is this? Ugh. There's this whole thing at work here where, like, she is written as though she's Anya on Buffy, and she's, like, experiencing human pain, and she doesn't like it, and she keeps doing these, like, little Starman head cocks, and then the human characters have to be like, what you're feeling is heartbreak. Like, look, Valerie's had some problems and might have some emotional, like, attachment issues based on things that happened to her in her past, but this is ridiculous. Sure. Like, she knows how to experience love. We've seen her do it. Also, it's Noah. Fuck off.
Also, like, he either is going to be like a Dylan-esque live and let love type, like, where he doesn't care that they weren't exclusive because they never said they were, or he's still all broken up about fucking dead Beth. But, like, how are you both? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get if he is still broken up about dead Beth, then what does he care about whatever he was doing to, like, fill time with Val? You know, like,
yeah,
his motivations are weird.
And then who, I mean, this might explain why his acting choices aren't, but Ron Howard voice, it does not.
Yeah.
He always just looks like he's about to sneeze, but I have
to
say,
he does.
His hair is ridiculous. He's a terrible actor, and yet I find him very enjoyable and amusing because there is no point to him and he sucks.
No.
So I don't know. Yes. Like, I'm clinging to any, like, tiny, tiny frond of fun at this point. And he's pretty fun for me because he's terrible.
He is. Here's the opposite of that. The next day, Val brings lunch to the beat. Clip 7.
Then some and then some.
Die! I hate him so much.
My notes literally have "shut up" like in capital letters, crossing like 4 lines of notebook paper. I can't.
Yeah. So Brandon is suspicious of Val's motives, and he says straight to her face that she deserves whatever she's getting from Noah, but slightly backs down when he sees that she is hurt and asks if she actually went to see him. She gets into some self-recrimination about her sexual ethics. Who cares? When we next see Noah, he's in a bar next to a swarthy Louis C.K., which you can also see in the visual aids, and with a bunch of empty beer bottles in front of him, being told by the waitress that he's had enough, and then ignoring her and clinking the empties with the one in his hand to approximate Mozart, or actually clip 8.
This is Mozart.
No, it's not Mozart. It's just not.
You know, Mozart, like, Kierkegaard, the guy who does my, the guy who changes my oil. Like, oh my God.
I know. God, like, okay. You know, I certainly believe that Vincent Young doesn't know how to pronounce that name properly, but Noah is supposed to be like a super old money swell, as we're about to be reminded. Like, he would know how to pronounce it properly. And if the actor didn't on the day, like, maybe another take. I don't know. I'm not directing this, but Jesus. Oh, so embarrassing. God.
And then a fight breaks out and the bartender just calls and like calls 911 and is like, yeah, we got a fight brewing here. Like, they're literally on the ground banging each other's heads on the ground already. It's like, it's not brewing, Brohim. It's on.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Also, who cares?
Also, he calls 911. Like, I think if you're a bar, you just have the number for your local station. Like, the two idiots poking at each other isn't really an emergency per se, in my opinion.
Or just, I don't know, climb over the bar and break it up yourself. Like, this doesn't look like an establishment where this never happens.
No, seriously. And Noah is quite drunk at this point, probably. Like, there were like 7 empty beer bottles. I know it's just beer, but still. Anyway, then a third idiot gets involved as Brandon, for some reason, is Noah's call from the police station. We shit on her all the time, so I'm going to give Jenny Garth credit for her WTF look at this reveal. It's also in the visual aids in GIF form. Brandon brings Noah, who already has a huge black eye, back to his dumb boat. Noah offers to pay Brandon back for the rent and looks for his checkbook. Brandon stops and says the next day is fine before offering the unsolicited advice that whatever is up with Noah, the solution's not to beat someone else up. And Noah says he feels like he's swinging at ghosts and shadows, which is maybe his most Dylan-y line yet, and then goes for another beer, changes his mind when Brandon declines, and then says today's a very special day, eventually getting around to saying it's Beth's death day. The first anniversary. And this is when we find out he drove drunk and killed her, which there are more details, but who cares? Noah thinks his memories of how much Beth bled. I'm just saying, Noah thinks his memories of how much Beth bled are why he was so affected when Kelly got shot, as if like her getting shot is not enough in itself. But he's running from his family, none of whom approved of Beth when she was alive anyway, because she didn't come from the right family. And Brandon's like, wait, what? And Noah recaps the conversation in the bar about coming from money and going to Harvard and that he was telling the truth. Brandon, clip 9.
You were feeding Steve some line about you coming from a rich family.
Well, I never said rich. Incredibly wealthy. I mean, rich is what you got here in Beverly Hills. Rich was Beth's family.
But you were kidding, weren't you?
No. You ever heard of Hunter Oil and Chemical?
Yeah, sure. They're a Fortune 500 company. You're one of those hunters?
It's crazy, isn't it? And my trust fund's kicking into high gear. I got millions. Millions, man. I could care less.
Couldn't.
Wow.
Look, Brandon, I appreciate you not telling anybody about this, okay?
Yeah, sure, man. No problem. If I knew the words to say to make you feel any better about Beth, I'd say them.
I know you would, man. Thanks.
How about I'm going to drown myself? I know I'd perk up.
Jesus. Also, this ends with a manly handshake, because of course it does. Barf. Moving on to our B plot. David still can't work money. So a bar back who is played by Hitchcock from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I must mention here, if you enjoy his pre-Brooklyn Nine-Nine work, please go back to the Little House on the Podcast archives, because an even younger Hitchcock from Brooklyn Nine-Nine was on that as a some weird illiterate kid in the school in season one. He's putting clean glasses away when David has to come in to lay him off. Hitchcock says he'll ride it out while things are slow, but David says he can't pay him. Clip 10.
I owe you, the landlord, Donna. Can't believe what's happened to this place.
You happened!
Thank you! It's not like it was a lightning strike. Like, what? You fucked up. That's what happened.
Really? CEO of the year? Can't believe it at all? Kay! Oh my God. Yeah.
So Hitchcock knows a guy who can help David with a loan. David says he can't get a loan. He's tried, but Hitchcock talks around the situation with private banker this and rates are steep that. And if you're desperate, and David is too dumb to realize he's talking about a loan shark, and asks Hitchcock to set something up. And then Donna shows up. David manages to act pleasant despite her bonkers hair front and back, which you can see in the visual aids. It's unacceptable. Donna is all cooing and flirting and like, are we the only ones who remember how these two ended the last episode? Because that was acrimonious, but whatever.
What the hell?
Yeah, I maybe there was a time jump here too, but whatever. Vanessa Markley, the stylist from the premiere, recommended Donna for another styling job and they need a location. She recommended the Peach Pit After Dark, for which David will get paid. He is actually grateful, though not as pathetically grateful as I would like to see. But, you know, it's him, so I guess you great on a curve. Kelly takes a break from doing street outreach to local sex workers, which we will get to visit the set of Donna's photo shoot and let Donna bore her about her big plans to fuck David later. So that it will be very sad for us when we cut upstairs to find out David has a scheduling conflict in the form of his loan shark meeting and actually has clarity about his situation for once in clip 11.
How exactly do you say that to somebody, you know? I'm sorry, honey, but you're living with a loser and you're not going to be seeing him tonight because he's meeting with a loan shark.
That worked.
Mm-hmm. it's concise. Yeah. But anyway, he did eventually figure out what private banker means, kind of, because he then asks Hitchcock if he can't get the guy to reschedule, and Hitchcock is like, no. So then David calls Donna to tell her the bad news about his investor who's running late. Donna? Clip 12.
What kind of investor meets you at this hour?
He runs a nightclub, you stunad. Like, even, like, leaving aside the loan shark bit, which... Like, he runs a nightclub. What kind of investor would meet him at any hour with AM after it? Get over it. Also, dump him.
Yeah. Also, it's what kind of investor would meet you at this hour, not this hour, weirdo. Yeah. But that's beside the point. She's shopping for lingerie at, judging by the items, she's looking at Kmart and goes to checkout because we're watching it. We know for sure that there's going to be a problem with her payment. Okay, so it's 1997. She pays with a check. Debit card technology was very common, and I think way more common than whatever this contraption is that the cashier runs Donna's check through to tell her that the check is NSF. And she nicely asks if Donna would rather pay by credit card, and Donna is alarmed that something seems to be wrong with her check. So then, LOL, David is meeting the loan shark at guess where?
Eclipse, the only restaurant in town.
Correct. The guy's name is Everett Sands, and he's a hey, it's that guy in real life named Robert Torti. Look him up. T-O-R-T-I.
I like that guy, but I think Everett Sarif is a better dude.
Okay. David has entirely the wrong attitude about meeting a loan shark and is all pissy, saying he doesn't want anything and can't stay. And Everett overrules him and orders a steak. David, even pissier, says he has to make a phone call, and Everett basically tells him, you're here talking to me because you fucked up your life. He will help David, but he needs David to pay attention, and David refuses to get it in clip 13.
You showed up over an hour late. You don't care about my business. What, you just enjoy jerking me around?
You're not going to lose your business. Don't lose your sense of humor. Now, I wish you luck on your club. I really do, but I don't care what you do with my money. Well, you know, just so long as you pay it back. With interest.
What interest?
50% per month.
What?
Yeah, you heard right. And it adds up. Which is why I encourage early repayment. How much do you need?
10 grand.
Okay, hold on a second, please. 10 grand would be like a month's rent, in my opinion. We're about to find out in the next scene that the check that he forged from Donna was for $2,500, but like, it's a commercial rent. It would be thousands and thousands of dollars, not $2,500.
Yeah. Plus he's behind on literally everything.
Glad we agree. Right. Anyway, Everett, proceed. Clip 14.
All right. So next month you'll owe me 15. You could manage that. How much do you owe on your credit cards? Towards your lease, to your friends.
Enough.
Yeah, well, they don't stay friends very long when you start hitting them up for cash. Now, me, not a friend. Remember that.
David, why do you think this is a solution to any problem? You are not going to turn this around. If you were going to, you would have by now.
Also, ask for more than 10 grand. Like, if you're doing this, do it.
Yeah.
Get 100 grand.
Do it.
Like, commit.
Yeah. Yes. Ugh. What's the worst that can happen? He'll kill you, and then your problems and ours will be done. Anyway, so Donna gets home, admires her ugly nylon slip, and then sees the bum check in the bag and gets all dismayed about it because I guess she forgot and didn't, for instance, find an ATM and check her balance, as I would have done, because it was the past. She starts going through the mail, which happens to contain her bank statement and canceled checks. Remember when? And sees the one that David stole. His attempt to forge her signature is extremely unconvincing, as you will see in the visual aids, but she's pissed and doesn't seem that surprised at the same time. And when we see her next, she's entering the apartment the next morning as David sits in an armchair in his clothes from the loan shark dinner, staring at the champagne that Donna had set out and left the check on the plate. His voice is all soft and pitiful as he asks where she was. She stayed at her parents and then doesn't waste any time before saying she found the check he forged. This is piss poor, particularly since he's had all night to come up with a story. Clip 15.
Look, before you go nuts, let me explain, okay? It was just one check, and I know it was for a lot of money, but I was short and the rent was due, and I was gonna say something, okay? I forgot.
Could you?
Oh, Donna, we've helped each other out so many times before.
Where were you last night?
Donna, I was with the investor. I told you that. Don't make a bigger deal out of this than it is.
I loved you. I trusted you. You're a liar. I don't know where you were last night. I don't know what you were doing.
I was working my ass off for us, all right? For both of us.
How did this happen?
One wrong turn after another.
I meant, how did this happen to us?
You know, you have this perfect picture of how life's supposed to be. You finish college, you work hard, you move in together, and everything is just perfect. But then some of the numbers in that equation fall out, all right? The band you're banking on turns out to be a bunch of anti-Semitic pigs.
I was proud of you for walking away from that band.
Yeah, well, pride didn't pay the rent.
You could have asked me for help.
I didn't want to. I wanted to do it myself. I wanted you to believe in me.
How? By stealing from me? By lying to me?
I want you to have faith in me. I mean, how could you if you knew I was failing?
Believe anything that you say now.
And then she kicks him out. It's unprecedented. Okay, it's not unprecedented, but it's definitely a big leap forward for her character in this season, for sure.
Yeah, it really is. A few things. First of all, you'll see it in the visual aids, but that blocking is back. Get your hands away from your face. Except when you're making that pissy entitled face, which you usually are, in which case put your hands over your face and then jump into the sea with your giant right pants. There. You will drown. Before you go nuts,
yes,
it was only one check. Like, you know, it's bad enough when dudes do that, that it's like, all right, before you get hysterical, like, this is legit hysteria territory.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Mm-hmm. Once you were busted, either you go to find her to apologize or you start packing your shit knowing that you need to get out. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
And how did this happen to us? It started happening when he was a junior.
Yeah.
Cannot handle any stress at all. He sucks.
Yeah. It's really the only consistent note in his character, it must be said. So, like, true. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
But he's the worst. But yeah. I mean, I get why he thought he could skate on this too, because she's let him get away with so much over the years. But yeah, this is different.
Yeah. Unacceptable. And good for her for giving him the boot.
Yeah, especially since he promises to get her the money back. She's like, it's not about that. Like, it is, but it isn't. Duh.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yikes.
That's it for them in this episode. On to our A plot. Remember Erica? She's turning tricks. So Kelly and Brandon are lost in a rough part of town on their way to the freeway when they stop at a light. And Brandon sensitively points out something noteworthy on the corner. Clip 16.
Hookers.
Oh, no. It's almost as bad. The actual transition is so terrible.
We're not there yet. So Kelly says the one next to their car can't be more than 15. And then she makes eye contact and Kelly quickly looks away, but it's too late. And the girl starts yelling at them. And when the light changes, Brandon starts to go. But Kelly makes him back up on the grounds that this girl looks like Dylan's sister, which she does not. It's a different actor. But when Kelly says her name, Erica bolts, and even though Kelly is the one who recognized her and who Erica seemed to recognize back, Brandon orders Kelly to stay in the car with the doors locked and goes running after Erica. She runs up an alley that's dead-ended with a fence, and he's putting on his gentlest face as he asks if she's Erica, and Kelly hasn't listened to him, instead drove after them and parks, and clip 17.
Erica, it's me, Kelly!
first of all, she runs off wearing like, you know, combat boots, which not what they're wearing on the stroll in LA. No. Pretty sure. Second of all, I love the like beat poetry bongos followed by yes. Like, oh my God, why? Why is this happening?
You gotta help us, Kelly. We're trying everything, nothing, and we're all out of ideas. Anyway. So after the credits, Brandon and Kelly are at a teen outreach center talking to a social worker named Pam, who says they work with teen runaways. A word on Pam. She's played by Nancy Moonves, as in Les Moonves, to whom she was married and whom he dumped to start dating Julie Chen, and about which Nancy was very bitter, as one might expect. Look her up. There's some good juicy gossip items from the 90s or early 2000s. Anyway, Brandon says the detective they talked to thought Erica would lie low for a while now, but Pam says that Erica will have to work and eat or buy whatever drugs she's probably using. Clip 18.
You know if she's hooking for a pimp or on her own?
This is Dylan's sister we're talking about here.
Yeah, she doesn't watch the show, Kelly. Doesn't mean anything to her.
Also, the mid-century lingo that they're throwing around, like, I guess it was, you know, considered shorter or not that offensive or whatever, but like the number of times that they just say hooker, like prostitute, sex
worker?
At
least prostitute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when she's like, well, she's got to go slam some coke. Like, that's not a thing, Pam. Mellow off, Lloyd. Like, is she going to put it in some orange juice and then chug it?
I hate this show.
Since we're doing PSAs, Kelly says that Erica was a sweet little girl, and Pam says they all were until somebody messed with them. And like, that may be true of most, if not all, underage sex workers, but adults can and sometimes do affirmatively choose sex work. So let's not make assumptions about their lives based on prejudices. Pam also exposits that she and Kelly both work for the Foundation and says she wants to help. But Kelly can't handle this like it's one of her daycare cases, says Pam. These aren't little girls, they're young women with adult problems. And then things just get straight cruel to us, the viewers. Clip 19.
We talked to my sister in London.
Well, why don't you brag about it?
And what did she tell you? She's like, well, we came home one day and Erica had stuck a note to the door with gum, but of course it fell off and fell in the Thames. And we don't know what happened to her. Like, oh my God.
So what actually happened? The backstory from Dylan via Brenda, both very cruelly, of course, off screen. Erica had been living with Iris and Maui after she was rescued from wherever they were, Mexico, right?
Yes.
She was dating a surfer slash stoner whom she followed to L.A. and he dumped her, and then they lost track of her. And Kelly has a recent-ish photo that they had couriered. Pam looks at it and says she's pretty, like, is this the point? But she will make copies and take them out in the agency's van, but is careful not to get Kelly and Brandon's hopes up. Kelly wants to go with her, but Pam says that Erica isn't who Kelly thinks she is. Also, doesn't Kelly have her own job to do? Like, even if they both work for the same organization, it's not like Kelly is a floater, I assume, but whatever.
Well, she's a floater, just not in the sense that you mean it.
Well, I surfed that one up to you. You're welcome. Pam doesn't think it's a good idea, given that the evidence shows Erica doesn't want to reconnect with Kelly. And she is also pretty convinced that Erica is using some kind of drugs. And then I guess Pam just drops all her objections, because when we see her behind the wheel of the van wearing like a turtleneck and a tweed jacket from fucking Talbots, like the activist nuns who work with the sex workers on SVU would never.
Oh, God.
Kelly and Brandon are with her. Also, it's like 3 p.m. Pam points out a kid she thinks might know Erica. And Brandon and Kelly both jump out to get in his face. Brandon comes strutting over with way too much aggressive energy. And the kid, whose name is Ricky, can tell he's not trying to get his dick sucked, I guess. Brandon says he wants information. And apparently the amount of money he offers for it is very insulting. But Ricky takes it. He recognizes Erica from the flyer. He hasn't seen her lately, though. Kelly sniffs that Ricky doesn't know anything, but Brandon hands over his business card anyway. And then a guy comes out of the store next door and Pam calls in for an assist. And the guy who chases Ricky away is Vincent Irizarry from Days of Our Lives. You can also see him in the visual aids. He tries to scare Brandon by calling himself a big bad wolf, but Brandon isn't scared in the daylight. Despite the last time he postured like this with the criminal element, someone got shot, and stomps right after him to show him the flyer. And the pimp, whose name is Riggs, Ricky and Riggs, great writing, says that Erica is gone. Pam shows up to pull Kelly and Brandon away, but Erica, they want to know what gone means. Brandon wants to know what gone means. And Riggs says where she is, she doesn't want to be found. And then Kelly demands to know if he's Erica's pimp. And when he starts leering toward her, Brandon shoves him away like an idiot. Riggs pulls out a tiny little knife.
It looks like a nail. See in the
it does.
It is commensurate with Brandon's size, since it is still managing to be like at eye level, even though Riggs is holding it like at his own chest. But yeah, mm-hmm. It really looks like he pulled the nail file out of a Swiss Army knife. It was like, look,
yes,
look out, cuticles.
So Brandon doesn't back down, LOL. And then the cops are at the head of the alley and Riggs takes off. At exactly the moment, Erica comes out of the store so that he can usher her away with him. Pam tells Brandon and Kelly to listen to her, and they both just totally ignore her because they're assholes. Also proving that Brandon is an asshole, Sarah.
Wait, which? They're so...
He's doing the pocket thing.
Oh, God, he's doing the pocket thing. He's always doing the pocket thing. And he's also wearing a jacket.
I don't know if we've talked about it much on the podcast, but we definitely have covered it, or you have, extensively in the visual
aid. Sorry, except I'm really not sorry. Why? Why is he doing that? And why is he wearing a jacket that he borrowed from Buster Poindexter when Buster Poindexter was playing David Byrne? Like, it is huge.
So Kelly goes into a PSA about runaways. Pam thinks Erica will surface soon. Kelly and Brandon say they'll keep looking, and Pam says she can't stop them, but that the streets are dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. She then gets real melodramatic about it in clip 20.
It's a concrete jungle with its own language, its own rules. You violate those rules, and you could get hurt badly.
A concrete jungle?
Okay, first of all, ease up. Second, promise?
Seriously? That's exactly what my notes said.
She tells Kelly to call her if she hears from Erica, so I'm sure Kelly will do exactly that. JK, 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 clip 21.
I will. It's just Brandon has his own way of doing things.
His own ways could get him killed.
Dream.
Please.
The impossible dream.
And then Ricky shows up at the Beat office. He demands another $50 before telling Brandon he knows where Erica is. That was easy. Brandon, having his own ways, then starts braying nosy questions in clip 22.
Why do you do it?
Why don't you leave, get off the street?
And go where?
You don't have a family?
That's a joke.
Don't you ever worry you might end up dead doing what you're doing?
I already am.
Oh, God.
Okay, we get it. But fucking Brandon, shut up. Like, haven't you solved racism and homelessness enough other times that you remember that not everybody had Jim and Cindy to walk
that,
all over slash support them?
This is a person. Like, he does not exist just for you to use him to, like, prop up your own beliefs about the world or for a story, which we're unfortunately also going to get in the next episode. Mm. Like, he's just terrible. He is white liberalism. He's the worst. And that's when Kelly shows up. Brandon briefs her, and Kelly asks what Brandon doesn't, which is why they should trust Ricky, and he says they don't have a choice. She also says they should call Pam, but we don't see her actually do that before they head out. Of course, I guess we are in the age of cellular phones, so maybe she did. Then Ricky brings them to a room in a shitty hotel where Erica is passed out in a corner. He tells her that Riggs is gone and urges her to come with him, but she's too tired. And then she sees Brandon and Kelly at the door and starts getting all squirrely. Kelly is gentle with her, and Ricky tells her she has a way out and she should take it since Brandon and Kelly want her, but she doesn't trust that they'll continue wanting her and asks if Dylan knows about all this. Great question. Kelly says Brenda does. What? And that they tried to call Iris in Hawaii, but refers to her as Erica's stepmom, which she's not. Like, she's her foster or adoptive mom, maybe. Also, like, what do you mean you tried to call her in Hawaii? It's Hawaii. It's like you need to get a sat phone or something. Whatever.
Seriously, she's not answering the coconut. Okay, it's Hawaii. Settle down.
There actually is a thing called Coconut Wireless, which is like, it means like the gossip network. That is a thing. Erica surmises that Iris hasn't called them yet, and Kelly says she will, which will she though? Erica doesn't want Iris to know about this, nor will she go to a shelter because Riggs will find her there and kill her. Kelly just looks at Brandon like, shouldn't you have come up with a plan before this point? But Brandon says Erica will stay with them. She asks them to promise not to tell Dylan, and Brandon doesn't promise that, just telling her to come with them. Now that we're close to her, by the way, you can see this in the visual aids too. They did zero things to make this actor look at all unhealthy. Like, he could be saying, let's go to your Noxzema commercial, because their skin is perfect. She has the lustrous glow of good health. I think they're sort of trying to make us think that she is on drugs based on her being like passed out in the middle of the afternoon. And like, she has a big bruise on her arm from when we're supposed to think that Riggs hit her, but that's it.
Yeah, that could also have just been fucking Brandon getting grabby with her at any time. Who knows?
That's true. That is his move. But they do go back to the house, and while she's in the shower, Brandon tells Kelly he thinks that someone should stay home with Erica the next day because he thinks she's afraid to stay there by herself. Kelly is actually somewhat right for once in clip 23.
Is that what she said?
No, but it's pretty obvious.
What's obvious, Brandon, is that you think you know what's going on in her head, but you have no idea. Neither do I.
Wait a minute. We finally find Erica and you make it sound like it's a bad thing.
No, I'm not. It's just, we never really thought this through. One day we see her at a streetlight, and the next she's been beaten by her pimp and she's sleeping on our couch.
Yeah, so?
So we're just treating her like she's some kind of overnight guest or something.
Kel, let's just let her be, okay? I want her to feel like she can trust us. I want her to feel safe.
So do I. It's just that I don't feel safe.
What is there not to feel safe about? She's a 16-year-old girl.
That's just it. When I was 16, I was worried about what I was going to wear to school the next day or what boy I had a crush on.
And what boy did you have a crush on?
If you're concerned that her pimp is going to murder her, maybe having her in your home is not the best idea.
Yeah? Yeah. Also, Kelly had a lot of problems when she was 16, as we will recall. But
yeah,
anyway,
really.
Erica, not this bad. Erica comes out at this point unnoticed and eavesdrops as Kelly wonders if Pam was right and that the girl they knew is gone forever. Brandon suggests having Pam come over after work the next day to discuss next steps. Yeah, there's nothing social workers have more of than free time, for sure. He notes that they promised Erica wouldn't have to go to a shelter, but Kelly wonders if that's what might be best for her. And Erica looks upset and takes off. And the next morning, she comes down to the kitchen still in her robe. Kelly says Val will be there today if Erica needs anything, so I guess Kelly's memory of hating Val's guts hasn't totally returned. Erica knows that Val is there to play warden to the hooker. Brandon says it's so Erica will be safe, and Val has to say they've been through some tough times together so that we remember that was true with the old Erica. When Brandon and Kelly leave, Erica essentially tells Val that she's ashamed to have all these people who knew her before see her the way she is now that she's, as she puts it, nothing. Val says that Erica's bad choices don't mean she's nothing in clip 24.
I mean, I've done some things that I'm not proud of either. But at the end of the day, I'm all I've got. I'm not going to beat myself up about it.
Well, I guess I found someone to do that for me.
Your pimp?
Yeah.
You got to get rid of him.
It's not that easy.
Let us help you.
It's not head
lice. You gotta get rid of him.
You gotta get rid of it. You gotta wash that pimp right out of your hair. Why? I mean, this is what it's come to, people. I am singing a lot.
Also, why should Erica think any of you idiots know how to get rid of him? Whatever. Val then gets a page about a meeting on Rodeo and invites Erica to come with her. Erica declines, and Val decides that this troubled child knows best and can absolutely be left there alone. And of course, Erica waits 3 seconds for Val to leave, unplugs the computer in the kitchen, calls Ricky and tells him to come over. So Kelly and Brandon are very embarrassed when they bring Pam back later and see the kitchen ransacked. Like, did Ricky and Erica take the time to nudge all the framed pictures on the wall?
It's literally
so they would be
every
slightly
picture
crooked
in every room. And I think this just happens whenever there's supposed to be a robbery so that they don't have to waste
yes.
time like shooting the floor. But like, just do yeah. an insert of the floor. Nobody is walking mm-hmm. around the house being like, just in case they don't know that they got robbed,
right.
let's eschew this picture. It's every piece of art. It if is. You're going to bother with
like,
it.
As if we're supposed to think they were looking for a hidden wall safe or something.
If you're going to touch all the art, take the pasta art from the kitchen and throw it into a ravine.
Please.
Oh, my God.
At least take it down and like shit on it. Like, anyway, the TV and stereo are also gone. They go through the house shouting for Erica and Val to no avail. We see that they also went through Kelly and Brandon's bedroom. Pam is totally unsurprised and barely sympathetic. And Kelly says this, our final clip.
Why would she do this? She was safe here.
It's not our big worry. I think her pimp Riggs will kill her.
You're not serious.
Dead serious.
Calling me Shirley.
Okay, what is this spa music that we're closing out on, for one thing? Also, you're not serious. Like, yeah, we're pretty sure that this panderer of underage women might actually resort to murder. This is how in over your head you are, you fucking idiot. Shut up forever.
Didn't you see his emery board? This is serious business. Brandon Walsh is...
If he finds her, he might...
Hard as nails.
Take a slice off a melanoma. I don't know. This episode was bad. I don't feel good about the storyline.
Which is too bad, because we're going to be spending several months with it. Oh,
God. Okay, let's name our MVP. Donna for kicking David out.
Zach, because he basically got away with it and is barely in the episode.
That's true.
And has a snoring contest with his grandmother. I mean, it doesn't take much.
True. Least valuable player. Brandon. Couldn't even wait for the wine to end. Brandon, who does not know what he's doing, yet is certain he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. Brandon.
All right. We have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing scones.
Hey, buddy.
What Tracy says on Twitter asks us to list five things you could carry in Donna's boob cavern so you don't have to pack a purse. The pasta poster.
I got one. A purse.
What's that?
A purse.
A purse.
A purse, yes.
The 10 grand that David borrowed from... all in singles, though.
The computer from the kitchen.
Riggs's real knife.
That makes five.
That's not five.
We did it.
Yeah.
What?
That was four.
That was five.
You said a purse.
I said one. You said like one. Four. Then we went back and forth. That makes five.
Like I said, it was five.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Yes. May I? Great. Next time on Again With This, Brandon still doesn't understand how journalisming works, David still doesn't understand how apologizing works, and Donna doesn't understand how entire garments work. But you're going to understand how gargling Pepto works as you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this very podcast at AWT90210. I am useless London-based sibling Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is a big band loan shark, Tara Ariano, and our beleaguered production manager is beleaguered production manager David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
And this is your Flash the Cash DJ, and you're listening to KWBH. See ya!
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.